As we come to these last few weeks of the summer, we're going to turn our attention to some of Jesus' most memorable stories of God's grace, mercy, and compassion. These are the parables that are found in Luke chapter 15, the stories that Jesus tells about things that have been lost and are found again. And what they tell us about God and about ourselves and about Jesus' mission to seek and to save the lost. This includes the parables that we're going to look at today, the parables of the lost sheep and the lost coin, which are really sort of just appetizers for the main course, what we usually call the parable of the prodigal son. It's really about two lost sons. We'll find that out in the next couple of weeks. And with each of these stories, the stakes get higher, from 100 sheep to 10 coins to two sons. But the character of God, the good shepherd, the diligent seeker, the loving father, remains the same throughout. Jesus tells us that he came in order to seek and to save the lost. But as we see in the opening verses of this chapter that Shelley just read for us, Jesus' activity, the sorts of people that he attracted and spent time with, scandalized the religious insiders of his day, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. Here again, these first two verses of the chapter. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" This was not a new complaint about Jesus. They had been making this same objection over and over again since the earliest stages of Jesus' ministry. Eating with sinners, that implies acceptance of them, welcoming them. Well, that could be interpreted as condoning their behavior, and the Pharisees wanted to have nothing to do with that. The teachers of the law, others who were serious about obeying God's commandments, religiously separated themselves from such people in their pursuit of purity and holiness. Jesus' behavior to them was shocking, scandalous, especially for a religious teacher. It is for these Pharisees and teachers of the law that we meet in these first couple verses that Jesus tells these beloved stories in the first place. Jesus' ministry among sinners and outcasts to seek and to save the lost reflects the heart of God for those who have been left on the outside looking in. And it shows how God rejoices when they are found and brought home. These stories serve as a challenge to the so-called righteous, not to sit sulking on the sidelines, but to join in the seeking and the celebration so that all who are lost may be found. Jesus' first parable appeals to an image that is used throughout the Bible, and that is the image of God as a shepherd. The Pharisees were not shepherds. In fact, the Pharisees and most respectable people in the first century, for that matter, tended to look down upon and despise such low-class herdsmen. But the Bible, time and time again, elevates the image of shepherd from figures like Moses and David, who got their start tending sheep, to the shepherds of Bethlehem, who of all people were visited by angels on the night of Jesus' birth. The 23rd Psalm famously pictures the Lord as a shepherd, showing tender care for his flock as he leads them to safe pasture and protects them from harm. Other psalms take up this image as well. We are consistently the sheep of his pasture and the flock under his care. More to the point, the prophet Ezekiel once railed against the shepherds of Israel, those political and religious leaders who neglected and abused the flock under their care. In response, God had said, "I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. I will search for the lost. I will bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak." God says, "I myself will do this." And then he promises to give them one shepherd, a descendant of David, the Messiah, who will tend the flock with justice and with compassion. "You are my sheep," says the sovereign Lord, "the sheep of my pasture." With his parable of the lost sheep, Jesus pictures this long ago promise coming true in his own life and ministry. As he gathers the tax collectors and the sinners, as he heals the blind and the lame and the brokenhearted, he is gathering into one God's scattered flock. "I am the good shepherd," Jesus says in John chapter 10. "I know my sheep, and my sheep know me." The good shepherd even lays down his life for the sheep. It's really an implicit rebuke of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. They had failed in their role as shepherds, as teachers of the people, by turning their backs on the lost, by failing to seek them out, by sitting in judgment over them. In contrast, the God that is revealed by Jesus is the good shepherd who cares for his sheep, providing for their needs, binding up the injured, strengthening the weak. He puts them on his shoulders and carries them home. And Jesus even lays down his life for the sheep. We are well and securely kept in the care and compassion of our good shepherd. Most importantly, in these parables, the shepherd God seeks out the lost when they go astray. The God of Jesus actively pursues, takes the initiative to seek and to save the lost. "Suppose one of you has 100 sheep," Jesus begins, "and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it?" Jesus' question assumes that this is what any reasonable shepherd would do. If a sheep is lost, it must be found. I'm not sure what it says about us that we tend to pause and puzzle over this question. "I don't know," we ask, "isn't that somewhat irresponsible? Wouldn't it be more prudent to abandon the lost sheep and to stay with the 99 and make sure they're protected and safe?" But even the Pharisees know that if you lose a sheep, you go and you look for it. God is not willing, says Matthew's version of the same story, that any of these little ones should perish. Is it reckless? Is it irresponsible? Maybe. Though Jesus probably assumes that some provision would be made for the other sheep. But it only serves to underscore the importance of the search for what is lost, for what is most important. The parable of the lost coin, coming next, doubles down on this diligent, painstaking search for what has been lost. Luke, as he often does in his gospel, sets side by side stories featuring men and women, the shepherd and the woman who's lost a coin. The gospel is for all. And it is the diligence of this poor woman's search that comes to the forefront in this second parable. She's lost part of her savings, and she turns her house inside out until she finds the missing coin. She'll light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it. There can be no rest until what is lost has been found. The God that Jesus tells us about and reveals to us does not cut his losses or write anyone off. Rather, as Paul says to us in Romans 8, there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God. Neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth nor anything else in all creation. As we'll sing in a moment, there's no shadow he won't light up, no mountain he won't climb up coming after me, no wall he won't kick down, no lie he won't tear down coming after me. God's goodness and mercy pursue us, says the psalm, all the days of our life. Nothing will stand in the way of God seeking and saving the lost. So the God of Jesus is a shepherd who seeks and who celebrates. Joy and celebration is one of the common threads running through all three parables of this chapter. It's often overlooked in these stories, but there's an argument to be made that it may be the most important theme in this chapter. Because did you notice that each one of these parables ends with a party? The prodigal returns home and the father kills the fattened calf. The woman finds her missing coin, and in a moment of extravagance, she invites her friends and neighbors to celebrate. The shepherd returns joyfully, it says, with a sheep on his shoulders, saying, "Rejoice with me, I found my lost sheep." This, Jesus says, represents the character of God. In the same way, he says, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Do you remember how we met the Pharisees and the teachers of the law in the opening verses of this chapter? It told us the tax collectors and the sinners were gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, it says they muttered. Luke picks up the word used to describe the grumblings of the Old Testament Israelites as God tried to lead them to the promised land, to the land flowing with milk and honey, and they dragged their feet. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." You can almost see the scowl on their faces, can't you? And it's not the only time that Luke pictures them this way. Theirs is a joyless religion that we're going to see most clearly in the character of the elder brother in a couple of weeks. Complaining over Jesus eating and drinking with the downtrodden and the disreputable. And Jesus tells them, "You are missing out. The God of Jesus is throwing a party to celebrate the lost coming home." But in these parables, especially the third and final one, he pleads with the Pharisees, "Don't stand around muttering and grumbling, but come and join in the celebration." There's a strand in our covenant tradition that argues that joy is the true mark of Christianity. And these parables support that idea. The God of Jesus Christ is a God of joy and celebration. We're not here this morning to save our souls or to be seen and counted among the righteous. We're not here simply to tinker with our self-improvement projects. But we are here to celebrate that before anything else, the God of Jesus has sought us out. And while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, reconciled us to himself, and brought us home. This, and only this, is the ground of all our being and doing in and for God, that he has sought us out and welcomed us home. The joy that is at the center of the gospel. We are invited to share in that celebration. We are also invited to share in the seeking. While the parables of the lost coin and the lost son don't have any parallel in the other Gospels, they're only found here in Luke chapter 15. The parable of the lost sheep does appear one other place, in Matthew chapter 18. But the audience and Jesus' intention there are different. It's probably one of those stories that Jesus told on many occasions. And here he's not speaking to the Pharisees, but he's speaking to his own disciples, his own followers, about their care for one another within the community of believers. That's the context of that whole chapter, actually. And Jesus' concern, as he tells this story to his disciples, is with those he calls the little ones, those who are on the margins of the community of believers, those who are tempted to wander off or go astray. Luke doesn't use that expression at all, but Matthew uses it three times in the parable, that the sheep wanders off. And the message that Jesus shares with his disciples is that that same care, the same concern shown by the shepherd to seek out his lost and wandering sheep is to be shared by all his people. God's character of seeking and celebrating should be reflected in our character as disciples. Particularly at this time in the life of the church when the flock has been scattered. We who have experienced the joy of being found are invited to join in the Savior's work to seek and to save, to bind up the injured, to bring back the wandering and the lost, to strengthen the weak, that all who are lost may be found. This is the character of our good shepherd God. And it's what he invites us into as well. Amen.